straight for him. And when he refuses to stand up for our children, when he refuses to make sure that the products that he's making money on are safe for the vast majority of people, that's where responsibility lies.
Well, this story's got a long way to run yet, clearly, Frances Haugen, but I thank you for joining us today on Times Radio to explain where we've reached in the aftermath of these two court cases. And, of course, in the interest of fairness, I should reiterate that Meta denies the allegations spoken about, and it says it is taking steps to keep young users safe and is, of course, appealing both verdicts, which means lots of money for lawyers, I guess. Well, that's it for me today. I'll be back at one tomorrow. But next up on Times Radio, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Neil, back, of course, with The Times at 1 tomorrow here on Times Radio. It is 2 o'clock. This is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover until 4.
Coming up in the next 2 hours, the very latest on Scott Bills. The police say the boy at the centre of a police investigation was under 16. Bin day is getting more complicated. We'll try and figure out the new rules for you. And how nosy should GPs be about your lifestyle?
Here's the news at 2 from Stuart Willey.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. Donald Trump has suggested the UK should go to the Strait of Hormuz and get your own oil. In a social media post, the US president said countries that didn't join attacks on Iran need to build up courage. He also warned that America won't be there to help you anymore. Rick Gates was Trump's deputy campaign chairman. He told Times Radio the president hopes for a coalition to control the waterway.
The president does want peace, first and foremost, but he also wants a safe globe. I think he had hoped that some of our allies would step up and participate in this, but most of them have fled and not helped. So I think the president is going to continue his course and ensure that in his mind that the world was safe.
Meanwhile, it's been confirmed the King and Queen will make a state visit to the United States next month. Buckingham Palace says the trip will celebrate the historic connections and the modern bilateral relationship. The Liberal Democrat leader says sending Charles is a humiliation. Police in London have confirmed that accusations against Scott Mills relate to a boy under the age of 16. The sacked BBC radio presenter was questioned in 2018 over allegations of serious sexual offences. Prosecutors dropped the case due to a lack of evidence. The Sun's Ellie Henman has been hearing from the Metropolitan Police.
The boy at the centre of these allegations was under the age of 16 when he claims this happened. Obviously, that's a major shock. So far, we knew that the boy was teenage age. We did not know that he was under 16. Now, what they have confirmed to us is that this all started back in 2016, where ultimately another force referred this boy's allegations.
Mills has not commented on the allegations. It's understood the Labour MP Carl Turner has had the whip suspended. The member for Kingston upon Hull East has been a prominent critic of reforms to jury trials. In January, the former Shadow Solicitor General said he was ashamed of the Prime Minister and Justice Secretary over the proposals. It's been announced a national inquiry into grooming gangs in England and Wales will examine the role of ethnicity, religion and culture among both perpetrators and victims. Chairwoman Baroness Longfield said the panel will not flinch from uncomfortable truths. The inquiry will have full statutory powers to compel witnesses as it investigates how police, schools and local authorities responded to child sexual exploitation. The British Medical Association has told Times Radio a new strike by junior doctors due to begin next Tuesday is not inevitable. The union has rejected a pay rise of up to 7.1% this year without putting it to members, but says it's keen to attend fresh talks. Treasury Minister James Murray says members should be able to vote on the deal.
The decision to go on strike is reckless. I can't quite believe that the BMA leadership are doing this. They've got a really good offer on the table, and they're doing this without even putting the offer to resident doctors themselves. So I think it's the wrong thing to do, and I would really urge them to reconsider and think again.
Meanwhile, the BMA says consultants and specialists are also to be balloted over industrial action. For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Good afternoon. We are here until four. You're very, very welcome to join in. Here's the WhatsApp number you will need. 0333 003 2353. And what have we got today? Well, Fee's about to talk to a leading media lawyer on the BBC's Scott Mills crisis. A bit later on, we're asking about food waste. Do you have a food waste caddy? And do you use it?
You don't use yours.
Oh, don't
it's the second
bring
time
me.
Today
I've
outed
you.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Just outrageous.
Well, no, for the same reason that I took against mine, which is after a while it gets incredibly smelly. If you've got a very large caddy, which you're pouring all of your stuff into and waiting a week for it to be taken away, especially in summer, it does develop something of the slimy nastiness about it, and it has put an awful lot of people off, and a lot of people are still just chucking their food into their black bins. But today is the day, isn't it, that all councils across England are saying that's got to end.
Well, what we're
caddy or bust.
Well, caddy or bust, yes. What we're being told is that all councils in England from today must collect or offer to collect food waste every week. So in the past, presumably food waste has been lying around in the more durable outdoor larger caddy for what, weeks on end before the council bothered to collect it? And certainly round my way, foxes are a nightmare. That was another reason why, if I'm honest, I perhaps wasn't quite as committed a user as of my food waste caddy as I should have been. Anyway, if anyone's got any solutions to all of this, and we will talk about it with someone much more qualified to answer questions than either of us, not that far off that interview. It's about 20 past two, in fact. So do let us know. If you're planning an Easter jaunt to the European Union, you better prepare to be quite patient. There are going to be queues as there are new EU entry requirements that are going to be in full operation across the Easter weekend. We'll also talk to a pupil at the most exclusive school in the world. It's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. The students hire and fire staff, and manual labour is very much on the curriculum. It does sound a bit culty. In fact, well, I urge people to just listen to that interview about what it's like to be a pupil at the school. The young woman I talked to, Ruby LaRocca, is incredibly bright, incredibly articulate, but it's just a little bit strange.
Who does go there?
Well, a cross-section of young, highly gifted intellectual humanity from all over the world. But there are only, I think it's 14 pupils are taken every year. So they only have about 30 pupils. There's only two school years. And you get in by taking an exam. In the first round of the exam, you have to write seven separate essays. And then to get through, if you get through that, you have to complete another seven essays.
And what does the school promise it's going to churn out at the other end?
I did ask Ruby, who had been to the school, and she does come up with some names of political notables, but other people who she was a little vague about, but I was told that they work behind the scenes. So, I mean, they're probably, what's that group?
The Bilderbergs.
It's probably them. I don't know. Anyway, have a listen. It's very hard to get into this establishment. It's in America. We've got Dr. Sarah Jarvis with the latest health news, and she will be talking about that idea of your GP quizzing you on your lifestyle. And cricket with Vassos today. The cricket season, brilliantly, is almost upon us, which is a kind of measure of just where we've got to in the year, isn't it? And who's our big guest after Hopper's Three?
It is John Batiste. He is a musical prodigy. There is no genre of music that he's not curious about and able to participate in. He went to the Juilliard School of Music. He formed a band called Stay Human. He was the band leader, and the band itself played on Stephen Colbert's show for years. That brought him to huge prominence. And in 2022, he was nominated for 11 Grammys. He went on to win 5 Grammys. It was the same year that he was writing his first ever orchestral composition to be performed at Carnegie Hall. Also the same year that his wife was undergoing her second bone marrow transplant for a lifelong condition of leukemia. All of that you can see in a remarkable documentary called American Symphony on Netflix. And John Batiste is coming to Camden in North London to do a residency this summer. So we talk about all of that after 3:30. We've already talked about it. We put it out after 3:30.
Okay. Nick says, re-food caddy, use a plastic container, use for packaging like mushrooms, dispose after a couple of days, use another. From Karen, food waste, you can buy a compostable, biodegradable food caddy liners online. £150 for £4.50. The bag fits into the small caddy, and when you have filled it, you put it in the larger caddy for collection, no smell or mess. Right, I mean, yeah.
Those ones have let me down, I have to say, in the past, because carrying them, if they've had a particularly kind of squelchy existence in my tiny food caddy in the kitchen all the way to the front door, they burst quite a lot. We had a fantastic suggestion from somebody who listens to our podcast in a very, very hot country where they have all of these problems to the power of 10, which is to pop your individual bags of small food compost when they're in the kitchen into the freezer, and then on the day that they're collected, just take all of those solid blocks out and put them inside your big food caddy outside.
Yeah, but do alert that particularly student residents of the household, they come in the middle of the night. Well, they might have the munchies. They might go into the freezer.
Alert yourself. It's not going to be soup mix as other things in the freezer might be. But that's a pretty good suggestion. I thought that one was the best so far.
I've got some sympathy for Gary, who just says, what's a caddy? Is it the same as a dustbin? A caddy is a small bin, isn't it? Why have we started calling them caddies?
I don't know.
Sorry, Gary. Right, 0333 003 2353. The most read stories on the Times website this afternoon. At number three, next level scary. Inside the ultra-competitive world of Disney adults. This is about how grown-up superfans fuel Disneyland's success, but the passionate subculture is marked by competition, criticism and high costs. Second most read story, Scott Mills sacked over investigation into offences against teen aged under 16. Apologies. More on that in a moment, by the way. This is the BBC Radio 2 host questioned by police under caution in 2018, but the inquiry was then closed because of a lack of evidence. The most read piece, Donald Trump tells Britain, get your own oil. The US president says the UK must start learning how to fight for yourselves, as the Secretary of War says the big bad Royal Navy should reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Right. And some news that's broken just in the last half an hour. The Labour MP for Kingston-upon-Hull, Carl Turner, has had the whip suspended. Here he is talking to Kate Borsay on the 10th of March. He's saying he wouldn't be pushed around by the party over the issue of jury trials.
I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not going to be threatened with suspension. I'm already on a conduct warning for having the audacity to say that these proposals are ludicrous. I'm not going to be bullied around. If my parliamentary Labour Party chief whip, prime minister, leader of the party, whatever else, doesn't want me in the party anymore, fine. I don't mind walking and causing a by-election, but I'd just say this to them. Be a bit careful, because the reality is, if God came down from heaven wearing a red rosette right now, that God would not be elected as a Labour MP. Just be careful. Listen to the PLP. We do know some things. You could learn from us. In the 16 years that I've been a Labour MP, I've voted against my party on one occasion.
Carl Turner, he's one of those blokes who says it as it is. Anyway, he's been suspended. He sort of predicted that he's lost the Labour whip. You can read all of these articles on thetimes.com. You will need a digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. Go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Now, Jan has told me off. If yours bursts in the house, for goodness sake, support it as you carry it to the door.
Yeah, for heaven's sake.
Goodness, I'm 85. I managed to carry mine downstairs from my flat, never a problem. Well, Jan, I don't like touching the slimy stuff on the bottom. It's some kind of different species to humankind and food kind.
I do sympathise.
You're a bolder and braver woman than me, Jan, and I salute you. It's 12 minutes past two. The Metropolitan Police have disclosed that the teenage boy at the centre of the Scott Mills investigation was under 16 at the time of the allegations. Mills presented the Radio 2 breakfast show. He has been sacked by the BBC. It's now emerged that he was questioned in 2018 over historical allegations of serious sexual offences. The investigation began in 2016 but was closed in 2019 after the CPS deemed there was insufficient evidence to bring charges. The allegations are reported to relate to the period between 1997 and 2000. Let's talk now to Jonathan Code, media lawyer and specialist in crisis and litigation PR. Thank you for hanging on the line for us while we discussed food caddies and other stuff like that, Jonathan. And now we come to what seems to be a very, very serious case emerging. But lots of people want to wonder, why is this all coming out now?
Well, I'd say that's a very good question. You know, I've been a media watcher because I'm a media lawyer, and I've acted for most of the commercial broadcasters. This puzzles me. And I was Philip Schofield's lawyer during all the drama that he went through a couple of years ago with ITV. There are some really puzzling things about this. I mean, you've given us the background, but we know now it was broken by the Mirror, and it reminds me a little bit of Hugh Edwards. Of course, that was broken by the sister, well, another tabloid, the Sun, which they were terribly proud about. This is broken by the Mirror, but again, it's a tabloid breaking news about a BBC present, obviously not in the same category as Hugh Edwards. But if, and I've no reason to doubt it, it's true that the CPS started the investigation in 2016 and closed it 2019. Why on earth has this come out now? I've had a little time to think about it since you asked me to come on, and I'm afraid I've got an answer to it, but it is a true mystery. I mean, the only thing that I can think of, well, we assume that the BBC didn't know about it, and there's hints from the BBC that they didn't, but I mean, I suppose that the answer is that having been presented by the Mirror with this story, and because they've had nightmares, Jimmy Savile, Rolf Harris, Hugh Edwards. Of course, the difference, we should say, between those is that Scott Mills hasn't been charged or found guilty of anything. But it's sort of in that sort of category. And I suppose that the BBC has thought, well, we need to learn from our mistakes. We were perhaps a bit slow. Well, they were a bit slow in dealing with Jimmy Savile, Rolf Harris and Hugh Edwards. So we just need to get rid of them straight away. And that's what they've done.
If, as appears to have happened in this case, the CPS deem that there is insufficient evidence to bring charges, has it become public knowledge at any stage that a person has been accused and is being investigated?
If you're asking whether it became public knowledge before the Mirror picked it up, well, I don't think it has been.
Yes, I suppose I'm asking whether or not the BBC could ever have known about the existence of this investigation before now.
No, I imagine they didn't. You know, I think it's most unlikely that they did. I can't imagine Scott Mills would have told them. There'll be no kind of CRO, sort of criminal records office record of it. I mean, it was an investigation that was brought a long time ago. It was closed. It concerned allegations about what he did back in the 90s. I can't imagine that it was on his CV. So I assume that the BBC were blissfully ignorant about it, but it having been splashed all over the front page of the Mirror, I don't think they had any option but to sack him.
What does the nature of his sacking, to your mind, tell us about what has gone on here? Because an awful lot of people are saying, gosh, this isn't how it usually happens, is it?
Well, you're absolutely right. But I think the answer to that is the BBC has had to learn from its own mistakes. Of course, it had the option of saying, well, these are only allegations. We're going to conduct a detailed investigation about it, an independent investigation, perhaps. We're going to, you know, question Scott Mills and go through some kind of process before we sack him. And arguably, Scott Mills will instruct a good employment lawyer, and the employment lawyer will say, well, this is a summary dismissal, as you and your listeners will know, that there's quite a lot of protection for employees. There's statutes protecting you from unfair dismissal. you have to normally go through quite a difficult process to make sure you're not the wrong end of a unfair dismissal claim. And it may be that the BBC has taken a risk by just going straight to a summary dismissal, and they may find they're going to have to pay Scott Mills some money or face a claim in the employment tribunal.
What might be in a contract like Scott Mills's that would protect an employer against behaviour that is against its rules and its ethos? I mean, these contracts are interesting, aren't they? There is always a clause about bringing your employer into disrepute.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's now routinely in there. I can't remember the last time I looked at a BBC contract, but I've done lots of work for celebrity folk. I have looked at celebrity contracts, and they all have one of those clauses in them when they've either been working with a broadcaster, or let's say they've endorsed a product. So I imagine that will be what will be a formal letter from the BBC legal department to Scott Mills saying you're fired. And that will include the rationale for the being fired. And I'd be very surprised if it didn't refer to the Mirror article and say this has brought the BBC into dispute, and therefore you're summarily sacked. Yeah.
And of course, the absolute truth, Jonathan, is that Scott Mills was presenting a programme that sells itself on being listened to by every member of the family. This is the specific problem, isn't it, for Radio 2? It is a vast network, and it invites an 8-year-old to be in the car with their 52-year-old grandmother or a 16-year-old in between time. It's a family place, isn't it? So the disrepute is very specific here.
Well, absolutely. But while I mean, I listen to Radio 2 sometimes, it's a good radio station, it seems to me. It does try and appeal to the widest ambit of folk. But again, I think back, Jimmy Savile, old enough to remember Jimmy Savile's Saturday Night Show, very much a guy who presented to kids. Hugh Edwards, of course, did the Queen's funeral, and everybody knew he was. And I also old enough to remember Rob Harris on television. So he was dealing with kids as well. So you're absolutely right. The demographic of the listeners to Scott Mills' show will very much have included families and young children. So that's another reason why, if he's even if there's only a whiff of this kind of offence around him, the BBC can't have him on the airwaves.
Yep. I mean, it's absolutely true, isn't it? The bar is just different. I mean, the factor there, as we talked about at the beginning of this interview, the CPS deemed there was insufficient evidence to bring charges. Scott Mills has not been charged with anything. But you cannot imagine a Director General being able to put out a statement that somehow managed to say that could have happened, but he's going to carry on the breakfast show. It's just impossible to imagine that, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, the alternative would have been a very strong statement from the BBC, which I think they'll probably draft. You know, the BBC sets very, very high standards for its presenters, and it takes any allegations of this kind of impropriety very seriously, and therefore has immediately commissioned a senior lawyer, a King's Counsel or something like that, to conduct a full investigation. And Mr. Mills will be suspended while that's underway. So that would have been the alternative to sacking straight away. But speaking as someone who amongst other things, a reputation management lawyer, if they'd asked me, I said, you've got to sack him. You know, you cannot have any suggestion by Fleet Street, which you can imagine all the Fleet Street headlines, who obviously have a commercial. Forgive me, I've forgotten your Times Radio. I do apologise. But, you know, Fleet Street obviously is a commercial rival to the BBC. And they're not going to spare the BBC. And, you know, Hugh Edwards, Rolf Harris, Jimmy Savile, and all, you know, they'll all be mentioned in the same article. And they all say, how on earth can the BBC justify not sacking him immediately?
Yeah. Jonathan,
so it had to be done.
Can I just ask a quick question, Jonathan? Is it on us as individuals when we are potentially in line for a role, let's say as lucrative and as responsible, actually, as the host of a really popular mainstream radio breakfast show, to tell the employer about stuff we have or don't have in our locker?
Well, morally, yes. I totally see your point. I'm a devout Christian. You know, you're generally supposed, in, you know, if you walk in my faith, to be candid about your failings. But from a practical point of view, I mean, is he ever going to get a job? So he's most unlikely to have put that down in his CV. I think the next question then is, which you may be about to ask me, is, well, you know, has the BBC failed it by hiring him with this skeleton in his cupboard? And the answer is possibly they were. But it's very difficult to see how the BBC could have learnt about it. I mean, you know, there will be no public record, I imagine. I have no idea how the Mirror...
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
But there'll be no public record, right. I don't think, of Scott Mills being investigated, and there's no practical way, therefore, that the BBC could have known about it. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, certainly it's not something that we've talked about before when we've talked about Scott Mills. Thank you very much indeed. We are Times Radio. Jonathan, you're so welcome anytime. Jonathan Code, media lawyer and specialist in crisis and litigation PR.
Really interesting. Your many messages on kitchen waste. Well, they haven't been wasted. See what I did there? Because we're going to talk about bins and food waste next here on Times Radio. It is 24 and a half minutes past two.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I don't think the British man's built for yoga.
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee delve a bit further into the day's news and give their views on all the hot topics of the day.
Let's not become a society that is completely reliant on digital communications.
Unencumbered and off-air.
She had an amazing Scouse sense of humour, Fee.
Is there a really bad Scouse sense of humour?
No, there isn't.
Off-air, the podcast, now available on the Times Radio app.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature, but this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Listen to Times Radio at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Right, you've taken some really quite stern tones with us this afternoon on the subject of food waste. Catherine says, on the problem of slimy compost bags breaking as one carries them outside, I suggest taking the small food caddy outside with you and only taking the full liner bag out when you are right next to the larger food waste bin. Problem solved.
Yeah, that is a very good suggestion.
Thank you. Let's bring in Helen Bird from the recycling charity RAP, where she is Director for Material System Transformation. Now, just explain to us, Helen, exactly what has come in England from today.
Yeah, today is a fantastic milestone for recyclers and the planet because some regulations which have been a long term in the making called Simpler Recycling are now coming into force. And what this means for us is that we're able, or local authorities are obliged to offer a range of recycling services covering paper and card, cartons, plastic, bottles, tubs, pots, tubs, trays. And for most people, the biggest difference is food waste collections. And food waste collections are really important for all of us for very good reasons. So first of all, food waste makes up around a third of all the rubbish that's in our bin. And that generates around 16 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions every year. So that is terrible for the planet. And the great thing with food waste recycling is that what happens is that that material is captured, it's turned into energy, and it also produces fertilizer for our crops. And it's good for people. And the reason that it's good for people is because an average family of four throws away around about £1,000 of food every year. Wow. And what we've learned from the councils that have been operating these services for many years is that as people start to recycle their food, they start to see how much food waste they're throwing away. And it actually acts as a mechanism for people to start reducing their food waste.
What sort of food is just chucked out? You say £1,000 worth. That's that really concentrates the mind, actually, that figure. So, I mean, in our household, I guess it's things like bananas that are well past their peak. What else? I mean, old bags of salad, stuff like that. Is that fairly typical?
Yeah, that really is typical. And one of the biggest items that's thrown away is actually potatoes and the other items that you mention. Frequently, the reason why people throw them away is because they're sold to us in quantities that we don't need. People don't always need a big bag of spuds. They only want a handful. And so ways that you can get around this is by buying what you need, buying individually rather than buying a full bag. But that is not always easy for people because sometimes the supermarkets don't sell it to us like that. And the other thing that we can do is making sure that we're measuring when we're cooking. So pasta and rice, for example, frequently items that are wasted. So carefully measuring that. A great tip that I use for pasta is roughly two handfuls of pasta per person, right? Generally, because you're a good quantity.
Okay. Not every council, though, is up to the challenge, apparently. Just a quarter of local authorities aren't ready for this new system at all. What are their excuses, if there are any?
Yeah, that's right. So most of us, great news that we can now do it. And the other 31 local authorities have agreed specific timetable with the government. And the majority of them have agreed specific timetables because they're locked into long-term contracts for waste disposal. So that is, for some of them, landfill, but in most cases, it's actually about energy from waste facilities, where these facilities have been built many years ago on the assumption of a certain amount of tonnage of waste going into them. And the local authorities are not able to get out of those contracts, or it wouldn't make financial sense for them to mothball those facilities. And so as they come to their end, then the local authorities will then start rolling out the collections.
Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating. So in some parts of the country, my fetid banana in my part of London can be successfully recycled. I have to say, thanks to rather an efficient local council, I'm fine, as long as I remember to put it in the food caddy outside on the appropriate day. But in other parts of the country, it'll just be bunged into landfill and will rot. For how many years does it take for a nasty banana to meet its end?
I mean, I can't tell you how many years. I don't know, but it's generating poisonous greenhouse gases. And so it's really important that we do recycle food. And that's why these services are coming into play. So, I mean, I'm up in Lake Districts this week. And unfortunately, in the particular area that I'm in, food waste collections are not yet rolled out. But I do know that they're coming. And once they're there, it's really important that people take part because, as I said, not only is this really important for the environment, it actually helps people to reduce food waste, which is great for people's pockets.
Yeah.
But also, if people don't participate, then the services become less efficient for the local authorities to run. And we all need to help the local authorities to make these services work as hard as they can to reduce our council tax.
Well, I really hear you, Helen, and you've ignited real passion amongst our audience this afternoon. So thank you very much for that. Helen Bird is from the recycling charity RAP, where she's Director for Material System Transformation. I absolutely hear, Helen, particularly on that subject of the supermarkets, only selling quite large quantities of things, because I don't want an enormous bag of spuds. I'm usually happy with, I've at least, you know, got the appetite of a bird. So just a couple of...
Yes, big bird, an ostrich.
No, I mean, that's also true. What does Duncan say? Bananas, big issue these days because they no longer last like they used to. They're now held artificially green and then they ripen very quickly. Didn't know that.
I think the other huge problem has been in supermarkets putting a best before and an eat before date on that some people have looked at and gone, right, I'm going to chuck that out, even though it could have lasted another week. Quite a lot of supermarkets have taken that off. We have got so many messages. We shall make time for them in the next half an hour of the programme. We're a tad late for the news. Our apologies. Coming up, we'll also talk about a university education with no internet but plenty of manure. That will take us to the Californian desert after the headlines with Stuart Whitty.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Steve, thank you. Good afternoon. The King and Queen are going on a state visit to the US late next month as Donald Trump hits out at the government over the Iran war. The US president has personally rebuked Sir Keir Starmer, telling the UK to get its own oil from the Strait of Hormuz. Sky's home editor Jason Farrell says ministers hope the trip may patch up a troubled relationship.
There is this concern around what kind of embarrassment could come out of this, but I think it's overridden by the fears of the row that would have erupted if this visit, which hadn't been announced, no doubt everyone knew it was going to happen, if it had been cancelled.
Labour MP Carl Turner says he found out he'd had the party whip suspended from journalists. Labour sources have told Times Radio the Hull MP was informed in writing before the decision was made public. The Metropolitan Police has confirmed it interviewed the sacked BBC presenter Scott Mills in 2018 on suspicion of child sex offences. Prosecutors dropped the case due to a lack of evidence. The presenter and the corporation haven't commented. An aspiring rapper has been sentenced to more than 10 years in jail for owning an XL bully dog that mauled his mother-in-law to death in Essex. The attack on 68-year-old Esther Martin in 2024 happened 2 days after the breed was banned in England and Wales. And Celine Dion is returning to the stage for the first time in almost 6 years. The singer has announced a 10-night residency in Paris. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
I thought I'd seen it all, then felt myself awaken. I thought I'd witnessed beauty before my breath was taken. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Stop it. At QuickFit, our customers drive away happy every time.
Get off.
Do we tickle their feet? No.
Oh, all right.
We just do our job, like having an excellent range of tyres to suit every car on the road.
Ah, that's good to know.
That's why our customers drive away happy. Quick Fit. Drive away happy every time.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
I mean, I could make a banana loaf, but I just wouldn't. Would you eat that?
Sometimes I have tried to rescue my dead bananas and I've put them in the freezer thinking at the weekend I'll take them out and I'll make banana bread. But I don't, Jane. And I don't know why, because it is a very simple recipe. But yeah.
Jonathan recommends a Beast caddy bags. Do you know what? I've used those. Now they are good. They're extremely sturdy. They really are strong.
Okay. Anne says, Fee, why not make it a really exotic experience? Put your marigolds on when you take your slime bag out to the bin. So many suggestions. I'm going to use all of them. And Drummond says, the little food waste that we have is composted in the garden or sometimes just buried in a vacant part of the garden. No organic waste. Hang on a sec. Goes into the general waste bin. It's not difficult. Mm. Could you dig your waste through?
Dig my waste out. Doesn't appeal to me. I mean, I really do have an issue with urban foxes, both front and back of my vast property, as you know. And I'm not happy with any kind of food waste being outside because they'll just go for it.
Have you not got the wrap over the top caddy that secures your waste against foxes?
Fox-proof caddies, no. I haven't got that. Okay, there's too many messages now about food waste. I mean, honestly, we could talk about geopolitics for years and three people would send us a message, talk about food waste.
Yeah, we could keep going just with your messages till Friday.
We absolutely could.
But we like them.
Yeah, no, we do. 0333 003 2353. Now, imagine this, a world-class education where you spend half your day shovelling manure and the other half hiring your own teachers with an acceptance rate lower than Harvard. This school we're about to discuss is statistically the most exclusive one on the planet. It's Deep Springs in California. It's a remote desert experiment where the internet is banned and the so-called bone pile communal closet provides your wardrobe. Now, to the outside world, not surprisingly, this is often thought of as a bit of a cult. To its students, it's a radical experiment in living their way, certainly without the internet. I've been talking to a student and a ranch hand, Ruby LaRocca, about why she chose to disappear into the valley in California. She told me why she decided to try to go to Deep Springs.
Well, it was a very difficult decision. I would say we found out about Deep Springs about a year before I applied. We thought it sounded crazy. I was like, I'm never going to go there. You mean the students run the school? That's never going to work. But we ended up doing a lot more research, my parents and I, and as I was applying to other schools, it was the only application that was interesting in itself. I really wasn't interested in the prompts that other schools gave me, you know, how has your lived experience shaped you, or, you know, what three words describe you. I mean, they're fine questions.
Well,
but
what did Deep Springs ask you?
Deep Springs, it changes every year. There are two rounds of essays. The first one is 7 essays, and there are questions like, you know, invent a new system of time or analyze this quote from Schopenhauer. And the second round, if you make it to the second round, is another 7 essays. So I ended up writing 14 essays to get into Deep Springs. And the final round is an in-person interview on campus, which is incredibly hard to get to. I took 3 planes and a bus and a car ride. And I eventually got here and I spent a week here. And it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. And when I got to the end of the week, I thought, you know, I don't think I can go here. Uh-huh. I think it's too much. It was so extreme. And the labor was so exhausting. And I wrote home, you know, my second day here. I was like, it's 10 in the morning and it's been the longest day of my entire life.
So you need to tell us more about this extraordinary community. And maybe the simplest way of doing it, but just for you to take me through an average day, if there is such a thing, in your life at Deep Springs.
Yeah. It's hard to say. Like, there is no average Deep Springs day in the way there is no average Deep Springs student. Everyone is incredibly different. But I'd say it usually begins very early in the morning. You know, it's 8 a.m. here, but I've been up for 3 hours. So you either get up early to do labor. A lot of the morning labor positions start at 5 or 6. Or you get up early to do your reading and your writing, because that might be the only time you've got. So I was up early to, you know, read Kierkegaard before my class. And after this interview, I'll have to do a few hours of writing and reading to prepare for my 2 classes tomorrow. And then after lunch, I have 5 hours of labor. Right now I'm working in the garden, so I'll be making beds and planting out and seeding everything and watering. And that lasts into the early evening. And then we have dinner. And then in the evenings are typically very busy. So tonight I've got a curriculum committee meeting. All students are part of a self-governing committee. This one is responsible for hiring our visiting faculty and our long-term faculty. So while I've been a student here, I've helped hire 4 chairs and a dozen visiting faculty. And I've helped them integrate into the community, and then I've gotten to take their classes. So it's very rewarding. It's very direct contact with your education.
Right. So it sounds like every minute of your day is taken up with some meaningful activity, whether it's intellectual or whether it's physical. The community, it is tiny. How many people are there there?
Right now, there are 28 students, which is very typical. It fluctuates between 27 and 30, typically. We all fit in three cars, and I know everyone by their laugh, by their handwriting. You know, everyone has a signature shuffle down the hallway. I can be like, yep, that's that person coming down the hall. It's very intimate in that way, and we know each other in lots of different ways. You know, we know each other as students and peers, but also as colleagues on committees, fellow laborers. I'd say I'm actually very drawn to having more experiences in manual labor after Deep Springs. I think it's something I'm really going to miss. I feel like my days are incomplete now if I don't do something very physical and very intense. So I go home for break and I'm like, you know, can I fix something? Can I dig this hole for you? You know,
so you don't go back home and just stick the telly on and watch TV for 20 hours as soon as you get back.
Sometimes I need to. Sometimes it's the, you know, it's the end of a term and I'm completely burnt out and I love watching a movie with my family and that's great. But yeah, it's true. It's very hard to, in some sense, let go of that great kind of interruption of the manual labor. It's like a really good circuit breaker. You can be so overloaded and so stressed out. And then it's 1 o'clock and you have to go to labor and you can't do anything about it.
And there's no excuses.
You just have to go and get your hands dirty.
No excuses at all. You can't say I've got a sore throat. Okay. I mean, some people in Britain listening to this will think, well, you know, I've heard these strange stories about the United States. This just sounds like a cult. Is it a cult?
We get that question a lot. I'd say, you know, my personal comeback to that is that, you know, anyone can join a cult, but it's kind of hard to get in here. And it's also that you can leave at any time. There's no, you know, there's no religious background. It's a very kind of secular place. It's all people who want to be here. I mean, there are things that sound very cultic, like the isolation policy, which means, you know, students have voluntarily decided that living with limited contact to the outside world is a more productive way to spend these 2 years than it would be if we were constantly coming in and out of the valley and having tons of visitors. So it does mean that during term time, if we have to leave the valley, we do need to get what's called an isolation breach, which can sound very cultic.
That does sound quite culty.
I'd say, like, it sure does. But the fact that if you have to leave, you can, is absolutely fine. And that everything that is enforced on you that seems like a restraint is actually something you've probably voted for. So the internet ban, for instance, you know, we vote and re-vote on that constantly. And it is a constant conversation and something we're always thinking about. And I don't think any decision here is made lightly or without the input of the community. And in that way, we have no, you know, charming, enigmatic leader. It's incredibly democratic. It's possibly the only, like, direct democracy, you know, self-governing direct democracy. So I do think, you know, aspects of it, you know, there are some certain initiation rituals that can seem sort of cultic as well.
Well, but, go on. Like what?
I mean, I'm not really supposed to tell you, but when I first got here, there's a very intense first weekend. You are unexpectedly, you know, told to go on a hike, which you are told will last an hour. You at some point in that hike, you get left and you have to find your way back. But, you know, there are things like that. You know, you have to muck out the, we call it the stench trench. It's where the cow poo and, like, fetid milk collects from the dairy barn. Mm. And you have to muck that out as part of your first weekend, typically.
Okay. And the clothes, you help yourself to just a pile of clothes. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You've heard of the bone pile. Yeah. So the bone pile is, like, our thrift store. You know, people leave things behind, things get donated. But if you need a pair of work clothes, you go and help yourself. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
How will all this, it does sound fascinating, by the way, how will this prepare you for life as a responsible citizen in the United States of, let's say, when you enter the workforce, 2030, let's say? Because it's a, well, I don't know if you know about the diabolical global turmoil at the moment, caused largely by your democratically elected president. Sure. How do you and how does your community fit into all this?
Well, it's true that we see these 2 years not as a time to be politically involved with the greater political sphere. We see it really as a time to cultivate our sense of what politics is. L.L. Nunn, who founded the school in 1917, conceived it as a brief period of training before students enter the workforce, you know, try to become responsible citizens and, you know, complete the rest of their education. And he really saw a dearth of training for this kind of intellectual and political investment. And the central aim of Deep Springs is to prepare students for a life of leadership and service to humanity. And so we take this very seriously. In a couple of weeks, I have to give a speech about how I'm personally going to live a life of service. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say yet. I think it's got to be something to do with education. But we spend these 2 years pretty disengaged from the outside world. But the result is that we can turn very close attention to the kinds of texts that have inspired and shaped politics and social theory and literature and how we talk to people. I mean, we really learn how to have deep, rigorous, civil conversations here.
That is the voice, and those were the thoughts of Ruby LaRocca, who is a student at Deep Springs in California. It is apparently the most exclusive school on the planet. And she's going to go on to, well, she wasn't entirely certain what she's going to go on to, but she's pretty impressive. It's probably been no better time to be disengaged from the outside world, actually. So she's probably, it's probably rather a safe thing to be doing right now.
I think probably enjoyable for her. You can tell that she is thriving in her own way there. But re-entry to the real world, you think, is going to be particularly painful?
Well, I mean, has she heard Pete Hegseth today? Anyway, that was Ruby LaRocca, and the school is called Deep Springs. I mean, there's quite a lot you could say about that, and I'm by no means an expert, but Google away when you have a moment and you'll find out more about it.
Just a quick tale from Tracy, one of our favourite listeners. Hello, Jane and Fee. I can't bear taking out any type of rubbish, so I'm completely with you. My daughter and son-in-law have to negotiate their almost 45 degree sloping driveway in the North Yorkshire Dales, trying to stay upright whilst being dragged inexorably down by an uncontrollable wheelie bin into the path of a flock of sheep or oncoming tractor takes nerves of steel. When it's icy, it's just best to sit and slide. Coming up, should your GP ask about your gambling habits, we'll hear why that is on the NHS agenda. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio.
Hugo Rifkind on Times Radio with Elevon. Join Hugo every Monday to Thursday morning from 10 as he takes a sometimes serious and sometimes satirical look at the day's news, politics and culture, covering all the major stories making the headlines with in-depth analysis and exclusive interviews. Hugo Rifkind on Times Radio with Elevon. We support all payments for your business. Make one decision today. Visit elevon.co.uk.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Need anything from Tesco? Like a Tesco Finest Wiltshire-cured crackling gammon. Or a Tesco Finest crackling pork shoulder joint. Now, even better than half price this Easter with your Tesco Club card. Because every little helps. Majority of larger stores, pork ends 24th of April. Excludes Northern Ireland. Gammon ends 26th of April. Club card or app required.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature. But this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
At QuickFit, our customers drive away happy every time. Do we tell them jokes? No.
All right.
We just do our job, but don't take our word for it. Take the word of thousands of excellent customer reviews on Google and Trustpilot.
There's loads.
That's why our customers drive away happy. QuickFit. Drive away happy every time.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Sean's listening to us in Bradford and has a suggestion, Jane. Drop your rancid banana in some water and it will make excellent potassium fertiliser.
Well, with the issues surrounding the political situation in the Straits of Hormuz, I mean, it's a serious problem, isn't it, with fertiliser not being able to get through potentially. We might all be doing it.
Well, do you want to start? Lead the way.
I think farmers might have, you know, perhaps need more fertiliser than I could honestly produce myself. But I'll give it a whirl.
I think you should.
I'll start tonight.
Keir Starmer has given doctors a 48-hour deadline to stop their strike or face losing his offer of 1,000 extra training places. This is where we're going to start our health news with Dr. Sarah Jarvis, GP and medical broadcaster. He's writing in the Times today that the BMA's rejection of this deal is reckless. Is that a word that you would use, Sarah?
No, I don't think I'd use the word reckless, but I have to say I am struggling a little bit with these ongoing strikes. Now, you know, 3 years ago, I was really, really in favour of them because they'd seen their pay eroded over the last sort of 20 years or so by about a third. We all know that junior doctors have had one of the biggest pay increases of any group of professionals in the country, whether in the NHS or anywhere else since then. So they had, you know, a 2-year pay increase of 22%. Now, there are other problems. And the big problem from my perspective is the lack of doctors and that horrible, the lack of places for doctors and that horrible, horrible logjam that occurs. You know, 30,000 applicants for around 10,000 jobs. And all right, some of them were doctors applying from abroad, but actually the majority of them weren't. And when I was a junior doctor, I didn't have to worry. I knew that I would find a place somewhere. It's crazy when we've got one of the lowest numbers of beds in the OECD, one of the lowest numbers of doctors in the OECD, and yet we're not able to get more doctors.
Do you think it is quite telling that you have begun to change your mind?
Yeah, I think it probably is. You know, when I was a junior doctor, all right, perhaps, I did take it for granted. You know, I know that the cost of living is a great deal more than it was. Interestingly, my kids have just got to the stage of needing a home of their own, and I calculated what a junior doctor would earn and how many times my salary that was. And that was 3 times my salary for a 1-bedroom flat in down in Sutton. And today that figure is about 11 times my salary. But I'm also very conscious that's the same for an awful lot of other people, whether they're in medicine or not. And I do think that given the very significant pay rise that they had just a couple of years ago, that we should be saying, you know, we should be saying, look, let's focus on the logjam. Let's focus on the fact that junior doctors today come out of medical training in huge amounts of debt that I wasn't in when I became a doctor.
We've got
find they can't get jobs.
Sure. This is a conversation that obviously we will keep returning to because there is no resolution in sight. We've got two other stories we would love your thoughts about, though. An extraordinary court case, Sarah, going on about the paternity of a child who was born to a mother who slept separately with identical twin brothers within 4 days. So the paternity of this child cannot be established properly.
So the first thing to point out is this is not a case that's going to come up very often. If you think about it, in the UK, the likelihood of having identical twins is about 1 in 250 births. So the likelihood of having two identical twins sleeping with the same woman within 4 days, I would say, I mean, I've certainly never heard it in my career. And you know, quite frankly, how long I have been a doctor. I'm not going to admit it again today.
238 years, Sarah.
Absolutely. But I qualified when I was 3.
You're very, very bright. But I think the thing that surprises people, Sarah, is just that you cannot establish different DNA between two separate human beings.
So, of course, let's remember that identical twins and non-identical twins are fundamentally different. So much more likely to be what's called a fraternal twin, a non-identical twin. So basically, the zygote, the baby, originates from the same egg and the same sperm. Now, before day four, the twins are likely to be what are called die-die hybrid. It goes on, but basically, same egg, same sperm. Now, interestingly, one study did find about 15% of identical twins have some genetic variations because of mutations. In other words, changes in their DNA. And also, there's a lot of changes to our genes that happen during a lifetime, so-called epigenetics, the influence of environment on our genes. But fundamentally, they have the same genes when they started out.
Right. This is at the Court of Appeal at the moment. We will keep our listeners posted as to what the outcome is. Final story, Sarah. GPs are being urged to ask their patients about gambling in exactly the same way that you would ask us about smoking or drinking. And actually, it comes off the back of a horribly tragic event, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's awful. It's absolutely tragic that somebody's lost their life to this. And of course, maybe we think about the physical harms from drinking and smoking and recreational drugs. And of course, everybody knows that they are associated with a risk to life. But the mental harm that comes from gambling is absolutely huge. There was a study a couple of years ago which showed that there were up to 1 million women, and that's women alone in the UK, at risk from gambling harm. And it's psychological, it's financial, it wrecks careers, it wrecks lives, and it wrecks the lives of everybody around you. There are treatments. And, you know, very, very tragically, in this case, the gentleman concerned took an overdose of beta blockers, which are usually used for panic attacks. And they'd been prescribed years earlier. Yeah. And he hadn't been back in the meantime, hadn't seen anybody. So, yes, I do think that we should be very aware of it as GPs. I have talked to many patients over the years, and it's been such a relief to them to say, oh, thank God somebody's asking about it, because I just felt like I was on my own. So there are lots of things that people can do. Healthcare professionals can definitely signpost you in the right direction. And I just want, you know, I want everybody listening to be aware, with 1 million women alone at risk of gambling harm, the chances are you know at least one person who is.
Yeah, and the online gambling is such a hidden thing, isn't it? The case we're referring to is Lee Adams, who died from an overdose after a gambling binge in 2020. He had placed 628 bets in 72 minutes. It's always good to talk to you, Sarah. Thank you very much indeed for your longevity and your wisdom. Dr. Sarah Jarvis is a GP and medical broadcaster.
She is. And it's Times Radio. Good afternoon to you. Almost 3 o'clock. Oh, a lovely pic from Jan with some twins in a basket. Have you seen that? Just have a look. It'll gladden your heart. Just glance at the screen now.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
You have to take it from us. They just couldn't be more adorable.
They are adorable. I wasn't entirely sure to what you were referring. I scrolled up and, yeah, they're gorgeous, Jane.
OK. 0333 003 2353 if you want to make contact with whatever this is. It's 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover until four. In the next hour, now this is going to annoy a lot of people, you'll need to have your fingerprints taken and a photo if you're planning a trip to the European Union over the next Easter break and perhaps beyond as well. Why some football tournaments are more equal than others, and our big guest is the musician John Batiste. First, the news at three. Here's Stuart Willey.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. Iran's ambassador to the UK has told Times Radio Tehran will only negotiate with the United States if it receives assurances there'll be no further use of force by Washington. Saeed Ali Mousavi said there was a mutual interest in ending the war, but he insisted Iran could not take Donald Trump's word in good faith.
Unfortunately, President Trump has a very bad dossier, very ugly dossier in this regard. And so now, if you want to have a very peaceful solution for this war, first of all, that we need to, receive and to be given one guarantee and assurances not to repeat the use of force and aggression against the Iranian people.
You can hear the full interview with John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive from 4. Donald Trump has suggested the UK should go to the Strait of Hormuz and get your own oil. In a social media post, the US president said countries that didn't join a tax on Iran need to build up courage. He also warned that America won't be there to help you anymore. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth has been speaking at the Pentagon.
This Strait of Hormuz issue, which we've set the conditions, is not just a United States of America problem set. We've been willing to lead. President Trump's led the entire time. But it's not just us. So ultimately, I think other countries should pay attention when the president speaks. And he's pointing out, might want to start learning how to fight for yourself. You can't just have a few ships. You have enough to affect change. Those things matter in a dangerous world.
Meanwhile, the American president says the King and Queen's visit to the White House next month will be momentous and terrific. Buckingham Palace confirmed the long-expected visit, despite calls for it to be postponed. The Labour MP Carl Turner says he found out he'd had the party whip suspended from journalists. But Labour sources have told Times Radio he was informed in writing before the decision was made public. It's understood the suspension relates to a wider pattern of behaviour and conduct rather than his opposition to jury reforms. The Hull MP spoke with Times Radio earlier this month.
I'm not going to be bullied around. If my parliamentary Labour Party chief whip, prime minister, leader of the party, whatever else, doesn't want me in the party anymore, fine. I don't mind walking and causing a by-election, but I'd just say this to them. Be a bit careful.
Police in London have confirmed that accusations against Scott Mills relate to a boy under the age of 16. The sacked BBC radio presenter was questioned in 2018 over allegations of serious sexual offences, but the case was dropped over a lack of evidence. Police in Northern Ireland say Irish nationalist militants were likely behind the hijacking of a food delivery driver late last night. Masked men forced the driver to carry an improvised explosive device to a police station in County Armagh. Officers say the viable device was destroyed in a controlled explosion. And for a news bulletin, when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Vassos Alexander joins us Monday to Thursday at around about 3:15 to talk sport. And today he is discussing cricket. The new cricket season, Fee, starts on Friday.
He's also talking about the astonishing amount of money you're going to have to pay if you're trying to get to a World Cup game in either of the three destinations this summer. Mm. And Jan, can I just say, your twins, your grandchildren twins, are absolutely adorable. And I'm sorry if I was almost feigning indifference to my co-presenter's plea to look at that picture. I just thought, is there going to be a link between the twins in the story we've just talked about at the Court of Appeal and the twin picture Jane's asking me to look at? But it's not connected at all. They're just gorgeous, bouncy creatures, aren't they?
They are absolutely lovely. And Jan, sometimes you just need to see images like that to jolly you along on a Tuesday afternoon. Now, people who might need jollying along are those people heading into Europe for an Easter break.
Very good.
Thanks. You will need to be patient because new EU entry rules, and they're pretty strict, mean you could be queuing for up to 2 hours at the border. All passengers without EU passports, and that's us, will need fingerprints registered and images taken. Airports and airlines are warning of bottlenecks. Let's talk to the Times Whitehall editor Ben Clatworthy. Hello, Ben.
Good afternoon.
Now, when do these rules come in, or are they already in?
They are already in. They came in gradually from October. They're being phased in over 6 months. And today is a crucial day because the number of non-EU passengers that border officers or border points have to process using this new system rises from 50% to 100% today. Now, there is still a backstop at the moment. There is a transition period until the 9th of April, where a member state could turn off the system because of operational reasons. But we are right at the end of that period now, and the expectation is that anyone going to Europe will have to comply with the new stricter rules under the entry and exit system.
I see. So anybody travelling, let's say, to France, when will the issues kick in? Would it be, let's say, if you're going on a ferry, for example, will you go through all this when you get there to the port? What happens?
Yes, so if you're going on the ferry or by Eurostar to France, that is a place where the border controls are so-called juxtaposed. That means you enter France effectively while still in the UK, so you're entering the EU. So you will do those checks for the Eurostar at St Pancras, for the ferry at Dover or at Portsmouth, or for the Channel Tunnel at Folkestone. And they're using a variety of different methods, including kiosks there at the Channel Tunnel, for example, at the Dover as well. They're also using a mixture of kiosks, but also some other processing there. You would get out of your car, you would go to one of the kiosks, you would put your passport in, register your fingerprints, have your photograph taken. You might also be asked a series of questions, the purpose of your stay, mm-hmm. how long you're going for. If you fly to Europe, you will do it when you land, when you get to the airport there. And this is the warning that came yesterday from the Association, a trade body of European airports, but also European airlines, saying that during the implementation phase, when only 50% of passengers were required to be processed, that at peak travel times, the airports across Europe, many big airports have seen queues in excess of 2 hours, and even worse at some really busy period. Obviously, it goes without saying that this weekend coming is one of those really, really busy periods, and that falls just after the requirement today that 100% of passengers are processed.
Can you answer this from a listener who says, can you ask Ben what happens if we've already been through this since last October and already had our fingerprints and photos taken?
So the first time you do it, you are effectively registering, and that registration lasts for 3 years or until your passport expires, whichever happens first. That is the time it takes the longest to do it. But as the name suggests, European entry and exit system, you do have to go to the kiosk or be seen by a border officer on every subsequent arrival and departure. However, the EU stress that it is quicker for your subsequent visits because the system, the EU central database, already knows who you are. So instead of capturing the information, such as taking your picture and your fingerprints, it is only verifying one of them. So you'll have maybe your picture taken again or your fingerprints taken a second time. But it is quicker once you've registered.
Okay. Brian says, went into, how do I pronounce that for you?
Murcia.
Thank you. Airport in Spain this morning. All those registering first time seemed to get through okay. We registered last trip, so going through the new face recognition gates worked very smoothly. Right. Okay. Jilly says, the main delays are not registering the data, it's the passport kiosk itself, especially since many of them are undermanned. Ben, I mean, it's quite often, I hate to dob them in, it's always the French, they're on strike quite a lot, aren't they? And they sometimes have a what you might call a lacklustre approach to their jobs.
Yes, I think there is an element of this. And actually, it's interesting that Murcia example, where people that have registered are going through the e-gates and it's working quite well. That is obviously very positive. France, there's been problems in Paris. The other place where actually it had a very early test is Geneva, a very popular destination for ski resorts in the French and Swiss Alps. They built this whole new concourse a few years ago up to a new non-Schengen arrival processing area. And you walk down this very long corridor, a very narrow, thin corridor. And at the end, you get to the booths. And it was there they are processing people manually. There are no kiosks. And they have four-hour queues over Christmas and also at February half term. And also, I was told, for some January weekends. And there, when I flew through in January, it was a normal Saturday morning. The queue was, I think, 2 hours at that point. And they had two border officers processing, I think at the time I arrived, four different flights from the UK within about 20 minutes of one another. And they had to get staff to take bags off of the baggage reclaim. That is something I saw, but we also reported on it before Christmas when it was a problem. And there are other examples of that. It was interesting because it was Geneva and it was a busy airport at that time of the year. What will be interesting this summer is how airports such as Nice, Barcelona, and some of the ones on the Canary Islands and so on, how they respond. But in big tourist destinations, there has been a big push by the local leaders there to try and make sure the airports are ready, because they don't want to annoy everyone before they've even arrived in the destination.
Okay, I mean, it's such a fascinating story, this. Johnny says, I'm 78. The fingerprint machine cannot recognise my faint fingerprints. Have you heard of that happening, Ben?
I think it is a known fact. There are ways around that. Obviously, for not everyone can have their fingerprints taken. My brother's got cerebral palsy. It's very difficult for him to have his fingerprints taken because his fists are often clenched because of the way his muscles work. We've asked the EU about that. They say that there are mitigations. You would be able to go to a border officer. They can probably register one of your biometrics, but also ask you a series of questions. There are ways around that. I would imagine the best option would be to speak to staff when you get to the airport.
Well, I would hope so. And I'm glad you mentioned your brother and the situation he's in, because that's very important too. Let's also just, here's a question from Mark. Do I have to do this if I'm transferring through an airport?
No, you don't. If you're a transfer passenger and you're not entering the Schengen zone, effectively, you're staying airside, you don't. And one of the reasons for that is that this will eventually also replace the physical stamping of passports that people will be familiar with post-Brexit. What this does is digitally records when you enter and leave. And the reason for that is that under the post-Brexit agreement, we as Britons and other third national countries are only allowed in the EU bloc for 90 days in any 180 days, and people have basically been overstaying using the prints, the stamps. This takes away that, and actually one of the reasons for this is to secure the borders and know when people are coming and going. So if you're transferring, you're not actually entering the EU, so therefore you wouldn't go through the system.
Got it. OK, I hope that's reassuring. What if you're wrangling a recalcitrant three-year-old? Do they have to have their fingerprints taken as well?
Do you know, you've got me. There is a rule on the age of children that do it, and I get confused because later this year there will also be effectively, they're calling it the ETIAS, which is similar to the American ESTA, and the rules for the two systems confusingly are different. Off the top of my head, I want to say that the EES is the one that starts later for children, but the ETIAS, the visa waiver, will be for everyone. But I would check that. That's off the top of my head, and sorry.
I'm sure we can check that at this end. Ben, can I just ask you a question about that overstay of the 90 days within the 180 days? So let's say I had a second home in France. I don't, but I often dream that I might. And I try and come back on day 92, and the digital gates tell me that I've overstayed. What would then happen to me? Because presumably the French want to get me out.
Yes, well, you can be fined, but also the EU can ban you from entering the EU, and that would be for a period of time. Now, the reality is it's within a rolling 180-day period. The chances of you getting completely banned from the EU for a two-day overstay are limited. What they are looking at is people who are basically second homeowners who are effectively living but have been coming and going, building up lots of passport stamps. So it gets very confusing for any border officer to try and work out how long someone's actually been there for. This system is more for that kind of overstaying than the odd day. But obviously, it goes without saying that I wouldn't recommend overstaying in any country, because ultimately they do have a suite of powers that they can use.
Really grateful to you, Ben, and thank you for bearing with us, because there's a lot of interest in this, as you might have gathered. It's also just worth saying that quite a few people have just messaged to say Brexit just keeps on giving. Keeps on giving. We just need to remind everybody it was a democratic vote back in 2016. This is what we wanted, and we've got it.
Yep, and we need to be thinking of that when we are 3 hours and 58 minutes into waiting at border control for two recalcitrant passport officers to take a look at our fingerprints.
I'm so glad I don't have toddlers that I'm planning to take to my non-existent second
home. Oh, I mean, if you're on a multi-generational holiday and you've got toddlers and you've got faint fingertipped grandparents, then you really are in for a treat, aren't you?
You really are. Why don't you stay home this weekend?
Okay. But I think that the point to remember, which, you know, Ben was absolutely right to make, is that so many of these destinations, they don't want to stop us taking our holidays there. We are a vital part of their economy.
They want our pounds.
So you would hope that some of the queues that we're seeing at the moment might go down a little bit. Maybe there'll be three people on duty over the summer months at Mercia Airport. We can but hope.
I don't think it's Mercia that's the problem. I think, let's just be honest, it is the French that's the problem. I hate to say it.
No, you don't hate to say it. You love to say it. Whenever there's an opportunity, Jane's rude about France. Right. Ban her. Okay. Coming up, we are going to talk about sport and we're going to talk about exorbitant prices at the World Cup and the beginning of the English cricket season with Vassos the Great Alexander. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio.
It's rowing's greatest rivalry. 197 years of history, drama and sporting prowess. And this April, Times Radio will bring you live and exclusive coverage of the 2026 Oxford versus Cambridge boat race. Hear all the build-up to the race across the Times Radio schedule, culminating in a special programme on the 4th of April.
Listen to me, Jane Mulkerins, live from the boat race this Saturday from 1 p.m. on Times Radio.
Official radio partner of the boat race.
The UK government is backing businesses with no-fee recruitment support from Job Centre Plus.
I'm Sophie Smith, Chief People Officer at Compass Group UK and Ireland, the UK's largest food and support services company. We need talent at scale across the country fast. We're working with Job Centre Plus to help find great people. Their local employer advisors help us advertise vacancies, connect us with motivated candidates, and last year alone, our partnership drove thousands of applications. We've also created something we're really proud of, the Accelerate with Edgbaston Hospitality Hub in partnership with Job Centre Plus. It's helping us bring local people into real careers. We provide on-the-job training as well as access to a range of apprenticeships from entry to degree level.
I'm Amir. My life changed the day I went to Job Centre Plus. I found my spark.
If you're a business looking to recruit, Job Centre Plus could help you find talent that delivers. Visit business.gov.uk/recruit to find out how. Eligibility criteria apply.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Do you think we're condescending about Brexit?
I think, yes.
Okay. Sorry, I'm only laughing because I'm not going to Europe this
Easter. I was
going to
try and defend our position of balance, and then I just thought, nope, if that's what you hear, that's what you hear. 19 minutes past three, we've heard a lot about the eye-watering prices at the Men's Football World Cup this summer. It is in the USA, Canada and Mexico. Even a place in the car park at stadiums will cost $75. But the next Euros tournament in 2 years' time will be a snip by comparison. You see, we're bigging up Europe now. Sports journalist Vassos Alexander joins us now. Now, Vassos, can we first of all talk about $75 to park a car at a stadium in either America, Canada or Mexico? Across the board, it's going to be $75? Just some
places. Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
It's unlike a journalist to underplay a story, but I think we're underplaying this. I think £75 is about as cheap as parking gets at the World Cup. The Athletic, who are usually very reliable, they report that the average parking, but this is a parking space at a World Cup, and some of them are like a mile away from the stadium. The average cost for a parking space is £135, and the most expensive is £225 at the SoFi Stadium in California, and that is like more than a mile away from the stadium. So actually, five mates, like the three of us, could invite two mates and go to a match at the Euros in England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland for less than the price of a car parking space at the World Cup. And that is just staggering, isn't it?
Well, it is staggering. Can I just say why? I mean, who's getting all of the money that they shouldn't
really get out of us.
I know that Martin Samuel gets a lot of love in this little section, but he did write something very funny on Saturday morning in The Times. He said that there's a comedian, I forget his name, who has a bit in which he says Donald Trump has ruined comedy because, you know, people are like, listen to what he's saying now, and comedians come along and say, would you like to hear a joke about that? And they go, no, we're all right. We'll just listen to what he says. And Martin writes that that's FIFA too. How can you send up an organisation that gives Donald Trump a peace prize and puts these ridiculous prices on so there are 4,000 tickets. This is right. 4,000 tickets at the World Cup this summer for each organisation, for the fans of each country. So England fans, official England fans, will get 4,000 tickets. At the Euros, despite much smaller stadiums, that'll be 10,000 tickets per fan. If you want to follow, let's say England get to the final of the Euros in 2 years' time, that would cost you, the cheapest way you could do that would be £325. If you want to follow England all the way to the final of the World Cup, more than £3,000.
Wow.
I mean, it is. I mean, you know, all of the price comparisons, now that, you know, UEFA have said, we're going to do this for the fans, we're not going to raise prices, we're going to have, you know, 15% of tickets. 15% of tickets will be £30 or less, and 25%, a quarter, will be £60 or less for the games at the Euros. That's fantastic. That's putting fans first. And FIFA have just done the opposite. They've just put cash first. And in fact, all of the prices were sky high. And then there was a huge backlash. FIFA players said, it's always the people moaning in like England and Germany, they said. And they said, OK, fine. With a sigh, they put a few prices at sort of like 60, 70 quid, but the rest of them, many hundreds.
So the $3,000 that you would pay, obviously it doesn't include your car parking. It obviously doesn't include your flights. It doesn't include any accommodation. So you are looking at somewhere in the region, even if you went basic for all the other things, about $6,000, aren't you, in order to...
Yeah, and you know, you want to buy your kid an England kit. I mean, this isn't FIFA, to be fair, but this is how much an England kit costs. A child's England kit will cost £123 for the World Cup. And I think an adult shirt costs about that.
So, they're operating in a supply versus demand economy. I mean, you know, things will only change if there isn't the demand because the supply is overpriced. Mm. But presumably that just doesn't happen.
I don't know that. I'd be very interested to see. You know, because the thing is, it's largely, I mean, most of this matches in Mexico, massive football country, and there's some matches in Canada, not so much. And there's some matches in the USA where they've got Major League Soccer, they've got David Beckham owning, you know, Inter Miami, and they've got Lionel Messi there. So it is a growing sport, but only up to a point will football break through in the USA until they get, because they've, US sports fans love to sort of follow a person. We talked about Tiger Woods yesterday. They love to follow a Tiger. So golf popularity exploded when Tiger Woods was the guy, you know, and then there's, you know, a LeBron James in basketball and, you know, Travis Kelce, say, you know, Taylor Swift's fiance in American football. They love to follow the person. And US sport, US soccer doesn't have that person yet. So until they get a Lionel Messi, a Cristiano Ronaldo, somebody who absolutely dominates football, I'm not sure how much interest there'll be at these prices.
The women are good, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they're fantastic. Yeah, really, and they always have been. Mm. And women's football in the USA has always been sort of world leading, to be honest. So I just wonder. I think the next tranche of tickets, maybe the final tranche of tickets, go on sale tomorrow for the World Cup. So I don't think we'll know until, you know, the gates open, until, you know, June, how popular it will be, how full the stadiums will be. I mean, FIFA obviously hope that they'll be vindicated. Look, supply and demand, we put the tickets at that price and people are paying for them. I'm just not sure.
Do you think this will be the tournament when that person comes to the fore for the USA?
No, okay. that person doesn't exist at the moment. Okay.
Well, never mind America. You've got a lot of other things going for you.
Oh, very much so.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the new cricket season. I'll tell you what, if anybody is thinking of buying those World Cup tickets, we would love to hear from you. And I'd be very interested in hearing what the total is for the trip that you're planning, who you're going with, how dedicated you have to be in order to cover that ground, actually, apart from anything else.
Yeah. Will there be any jet fuel?
to get you there.
How do you mean?
Well, by the time...
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, by the... Yes,
by the time it rolls around.
There's a guy called Andy Milne, I was reading over the weekend, who is... I mean, the headline is he's putting his house up for sale to fund his World Cup habit. Mm. But when you dial down into it, I mean, first of all, that's an insane thing to do, but you dial into it and it's one of his homes up for sale. So it's sort of, yeah, fine.
Okay, Andy, you had me and you lost me.
Yes.
Very, very quickly.
You do you.
Yes.
Let's talk about the new cricket season starting on Friday. Mm. Not England for a while, but the first-class domestic game. Lots of previews in the Times today. Mike Atherton profiling an up-and-coming batsman. Right, yes. Who are we watching out for?
It's a tribe. Last winter, writes Mike Atherton, during the Ashes, I found myself having a drink in a North Adelaide pub near one of the Australian A coaches who'd been involved in the series against England Lions, which is like the England B men's cricket team. Taking my chance, I asked if any of the Lions had impressed. There was a dubious look, and after a long, meaningful pause, he said, "Ace a tribe can play a bit, and in Australia, that passes for a warm compliment." So he is. I mean, the thing is, after the Ashes, England's opening batters didn't do very well. So Mike then just sort of describes what it's like to be. He was an opening batsman of some repute. What you need to do, the runs you need to score, and then he sort of says, "What are the chances of this young kid?" Who's not come through any of the sort of the counties, that he's come through Cardiff University and he comes from Jersey, where, you know, the opportunity to play cricket are pretty limited. So an interesting route to the top of the game. A chance of starting the England Test summer. Ace of Tribe Glamorgan, 4-1. So Ben Duckett will probably keep his place. But as things stand now, this young kid could well be the next future of England. 4th of June is the first test at Lords. But yes, the county championship season. I always think that's almost the start of summer, isn't it?
I think it is. I go with that.
It's the most mindful thing. You know, if you walk very, very slowly, really sort of comically slowly almost, it just resets your whole system. I think going to spend an afternoon at a county championship game, whether you like cricket or not, just does that. You can't help but feel calm and relaxed after watching county cricket. Mm. I used to have a pass that used to get me into any game of cricket, of first-class cricket, all year. And I used to just, I've got a free afternoon. I'll go and spend it at the Oval and just watch it, me and maybe a few hundred others, just watching cricket, and it just calms the system. You're ready for what life throws at you after that.
Well, you can't do it anymore because we've trapped you here.
Yes, there is that.
Yeah. When was the last time you were in a county cricket ground?
To be fair, when I was in local radio, I was in Worcester. So mm-hmm. I did used to pop down to Worcester's lovely ground.
New Road.
It always floods in the winter, but fantastic. You can see the cathedral from there. And they used to have a section called the Ladies' Pavilion, which had absolutely fantastic homemade cakes. I could while away an afternoon there. I agree with you. It's appealing. I mean, I don't really understand how it survives because nobody goes.
I know.
I mean, no one goes. It's all a bit odd, but fair play to them.
Well, absolutely. There's a Middlesex, the county that have Lords as their home. You know, they are languishing in the second division of the county championship. Further reports today that a group of former players has launched an attack on the club's leadership. And this is like players like Mike Gatting and Mark Ramprakash and Desmond Haynes. They are warning that the county are drifting towards irrelevance. But it's sort of from there, from the top down, from the ECB, from the MCC down, that the money trickles towards the county championship. Because without the county championship, there is no England Test team.
Right. Okay. Is there something that links that story to what we were talking about earlier in the week, which is the reluctance for the top of the game, the England game, to look at itself and mark its own card after a dismal appearance at the Ashes? Is the a top of the pyramid in cricket full stop that just isn't really connected to the bottom?
I think they would say that they do, they do connect quite well. We were talking about this guy, Ace Tribe, and he came through Cardiff University, and they have stopped the funding for these sort of university cricketing centres of excellence. So if you are a young kid from Jersey, as he is, then it's going to be all the harder to break into the top ranks of cricket because you can't do it the university route, and he specifically went to Cardiff University, which is why he plays for Glamorgan, because it was one of the four university centres of cricketing excellence. But the pathways are there, the ECB would tell you, and certainly for the men's and women's game, actually.
Lovely stuff, Vassos. Thank you very much indeed. We will talk again at the same time tomorrow.
We will. It's just after 3:30, so sorry about that. But we have a great special guest lying in wait for you. It's the musician John Batiste. First, the latest news headlines with Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. The King and Queen are going on a state visit to the US late next month as Donald Trump hits out of the government over the Iran war. The US president has personally rebuked Sir Keir Starmer, telling the UK to get its own oil from the Strait of Hormuz. David Charter is the Times assistant US editor.
He's very much using it to try and drag European nations into the Gulf. No question about it. The American forces have actually been depleted, and they've used billions, hundreds of billions by some accounts, worth of ordnance. So Trump does want traditional allies to come in.
The Metropolitan Police has confirmed it interviewed the sacked BBC presenter Scott Mills in 2018 on suspicion of child sex offences. It dropped the case due to a lack of evidence. The MP Carl Turner has had the Labour Party whip suspended, meaning he can't represent the party in the Commons. He's led criticism of the government's plans to restrict jury trials in England and Wales as it attempts to reduce a record backlog in the Crown Courts. An aspiring rapper has been sentenced to more than 10 years in jail for owning an XL bully dog that mauled his mother-in-law to death in Essex. The attack on 68-year-old Esther Martin in February 2024 happened 2 days after the breed was banned in England and Wales. And Eurovision is to have a spin-off series in Asia. Singers from 10 countries will be competing in Bangkok in November. Don't forget, you can set the Times Radio News Briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
Stop it.
At QuickFit, our customers drive away happy every time.
Get up.
Do we tickle their feet?
Stop.
No.
Oh, all right.
We just do our job, like having an excellent range of tyres to suit every car on the road.
Oh, that's good to know.
That's why our customers drive away happy. QuickFit. Drive away happy. Every time.
You've saved carefully for your future, your plans, your peace of mind. Now there's good news. FSCS protection for your savings and current accounts has risen to £120,000 per eligible person at UK authorised banks, building societies and credit unions. From the very first pound right up to £120,000, it's all protected. So you can focus on what matters with confidence. See what it means for you at fscs.org.uk. Your savings, FSCS protected.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Exciting weekend in prospect, not just the long weekend for many of us, but it's the boat race, the 2026 boat race, live coverage and commentary right here on Times Radio for the very first time, Fee.
It's exciting, and you're going to be there.
I'm going to be there, yes. And I'm actually really keen to go because I've been to a lot of British sporting events. I've been lucky enough over the years to go to the FA Cup final, seen a bit of Wimbledon. Never been to Twickenham, so I haven't got that on my list. But
I've been to Twickenham.
Have you? Well, there you go. Well, you can tick that box. I've been to Lourdes. You know, so I think it would be quite nice to stick the boat race into my collection. So I'm looking forward to it. Now, in the men's race, Cambridge are hoping to make it 4 years in a row. It would be their longest winning streak since back in the 1990s, although it does say here it would be their longest winning stake since the 1990s. Who is in this year's eight? I don't know why that's funny. Who is in this year's eight-man crew? Let's hear from this year's cox.
I'm Sammy Hudagi. I'm racing for Cambridge University Boat Club. And I'm the coxswain. The accent probably gives it away, but I'm American. I'll go stern to bow. Freddie Brower is the stroke seat. He is a German Olympian. He rode at Cal in his undergrad. He came fourth at the Paris Games in the men's eight. He's the nicest guy on earth, and he's also a major, major, major competitor. Behind him is Will Klipstein. He is an American. We were on the U23 national team together in 2024. He rode at Wisconsin and he was a walk-on on the team. And now 4 years later, he's seven seat, which is this really crucial bridge between the rhythm that Freddie's bringing and the rest of the crew. It's pretty incredible what he's done as an athlete. Behind him is Lexi McLean. He is an Australian. He's sort of the big, tall, gentle giant in the crew. Behind him, Gabe Albenheiser. Gabe is the first Brit in the crew. He's five seat. You know, he's the strongest guy in the world as far as I'm concerned. He's also one of the funniest people that I know. So that's a pretty good combination to have. Behind him in four is the kid, Patrick Wild. You know, there are not many 18-year-olds that have the rowing IQ that he has. He grew up on the Tideway. Like, this is his home river. Behind him, Kyle Fram. He is another American. He's the oldest guy in the crew. He graduated from Columbia University, you know, over half a decade ago now. Ended up in Singapore. Found the only rowing club in Singapore and just decided, you know, I'm going to train every day as if I'm on the national team. He just sort of grinded out for the last 5 years and he's come out of nowhere. Behind him, Noam, our president, he's the only Frenchman of the club, which is pretty cool because Chanel's the sponsor, so that connection's been neat. You know, two-seat, you want a leader. You want someone that can sort of make some calls to the crew and bring a level of steadiness, and that's Noam. Behind him, Simon Hatcher, another American. Simon and me were sort of on two very big collegiate rival teams in our undergrad, and so I remember racing Simon a lot, so it's pretty great to have him in the boat. And he's in Dow, and similarly to Noam, he brings sort of this level of leadership. You know, those two guys are our boat race returners. It's a crew that is holding each other to an incredibly high standard. That is something new for all of us. How vocal and how high the rowing IQ is in this boat, and how we've been able to leverage that in a way that I think is unique to eight-man shells. It makes it so that a boat that already has some pretty good parts is greater than the sum of its parts.
That's the voice of the Cambridge Cox, and we were just saying how he sounds huge, hulking chap. Probably not from Cambridge, realistically, but he's the Cox, so he must be quite smallish.
Quite slight.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you'll be able to find out and relay that to the listeners on Saturday.
Yes, indeed. Tune in to Drive from 4 o'clock this afternoon to hear from the Oxford Cox. I need to get this right. The Oxford Cox, Jasper Parrish, will be taking John through the Oxford crew at the boat race this year. And you must remember to join Jane Mulcairns from 1 o'clock this Saturday. She's presenting live coverage and commentary from Putney of both the men's and women's boat races, alongside former boat race winners and Olympic gold medalist Imogen Grant and Charlie Elwes.
Sue, we got both your messages and yes, we like them.
We're only responding to one of them.
It is 3:39. John Batiste grew up in a musical family in New Orleans. He got to the prestigious Juilliard School in New York. It wasn't an entirely happy experience for him, but it powered him on to form the band Stay Human, which was and is famous for playing wherever it fancies, on the subway, in the park, as Stephen Colbert's house band, on The Late Show, and on a stage at the Grammys if they have to. And they'd be on a stage a long time at the Grammys, because in 2022, John was nominated for 11 awards. He won 5, notably Album of the Year, and it really had been a year. 2022 was also when his wife, Salika, who he met at a band camp when they were just 14, was having her second bone marrow transplant to treat a lifelong condition of leukemia. This is all there in a film called American Symphony. You can see that on Netflix. Because John was also writing and performing that symphony, his first ever orchestral work at Carnegie Hall. I know, it is a lot. Here's a little taste of that music.
It never went away. Just the same. Oh,
Well, if you like the sound of that, the good news is that John is coming to the UK in June, bringing his multiple musical styles to Coco in Camden in North London for a mini residency. Every night is different, including a symphonic evening with orchestra, a fan-driven by-request performance, a night of communal song with special guests, and a performance of Batiste's jazz compositions from Disney and Pixar's Soul, which earned him an Academy Award and a BAFTA. He's providing such an extraordinary spectrum of choice, I asked if he finds it exhausting.
You know, I find moments like now, you know, I'm here, I was just saying, I go through these seasons, I'm sitting here, we're on our farm and we got the bucolic remedies out there and out the window. I see the you know, the animals in the sunlight, and I got my grits here. You ever eat grits, you know?
Oh, I tried them once, John. Grits. Yeah. They didn't really agree with me.
Well, look, it's an acquired taste. You'll learn to love it.
Okay.
And but for me, that's like fuel. We grew up on grits, and we grew up on these different things that, you know, for me, a healing allow for me to replenish the life force energy that I give on the stage. So I get excited about these kind of moments in June. I can't wait for June to come. And before that, you know, I have this time where I can reflect and sit with my thoughts and sit with all of the ideas and all of the different moments that are to come, and visualize how to create the most optimal experience and to give the most high vibrational frequency of my artistry possible. So if I have the space like I have now, we have this moment where we carved out some time, we're on the farm, we travel, we do things to replenish and to reflect and to visualize. Then what, by the time June comes, I won't be exhausted. And it's taken me some time to learn that, you see. Fee, it's taken me some years, and I'm still developing the process of being in flow as an artist. I get so many ideas, and I'm grateful for them, but I have to pace myself, to your point. I have to kind of carve out the moments of listening and praying over it in order to be able to do what I do.
Sure. One of the things that really struck me when I was watching American Symphony, which is the most remarkable film made about you and your wife in 2022, which was just an extraordinary year for you both, wasn't it? You had a symphony you were writing, composing, premiering at Carnegie Hall. You won every single Grammy that was ever available to mankind. You know, it was such an astonishing year of creativity for you, but against a backdrop of your wife being so unwell and having another bone marrow transplant. And it was your energy, John, when I was watching that film, that I think I was just so struck by how you were actually able to carry on giving all of this musicality to the world whilst dealing with something so, so painful behind the scenes. And I just wonder what that year looks like to you both now it's slightly more in the distance.
Well, we're still processing the lessons of that year. First, the gratitude to be alive and the gratitude to have our life that we've built, this creative life. Creativity is an act of survival. And we're constantly living and creating as human beings, and we're moving through the ups and downs, and many times they're all occurring at once. It's all happening at the same time. So the process that takes years, it takes years of understanding what you've made it through and who you've become, and the gratitude that comes with that is overwhelming, and the perspective that comes with that changes you in ways that are indescribable. So the film capturing it is a miracle in and of itself, a miracle of you know, the directorial feat of Matthew Heineman is commendable to have captured that vulnerability and openness that we as a family decided to share, for him to craft that into this film that now we can revisit and watch. You know, we don't really watch the film, but for folks out there to be able to watch it and to recognize, you know, what you see on the surface is not always what it is, and it's never really the full story of what it is. even those who are on the highest mountains are dealing with the same human struggles that we all face. So this is a powerful thing to have documented. And I'm grateful that we were able to share something of a testament to the human condition and the power of God through this film.
Your music carries politics with it, John, and I do want to ask you about the politics of America at the moment. Where's your head at with the direction that your country or the leader of your country is taking?
Well, the miracle of America, which is what the American Symphony, we talk about the film and the title of the symphony and the title of the film and the thinking around that was really looking at the miracle of American life, this idea that we can all come from nothing and all from different diasporic traditions and lineages and come as one, e pluribus unum, to become a country that's built on the identity of an ideal and a creed is a powerful thing. And it has to be of the people, for the people, by the people, with the people, all the way from the root to the top. People power. Everybody has to be accounted for. And that's not what's currently happening. You know, we're in a time where persecution around the world is at its highest degree, not just in our country, everywhere. Persecution, it has no gender, it has no race, it has no class. And it can happen to any one of us. If it's not you today, it could be you tomorrow. So what I think about is the power of our leaders, not in the political sphere, but in the community sphere. Politics are important, but people power is the most powerful force that we have. And when people come together and we make this act of community, this act of being civically engaged, this act of creating art that uplifts the spirit and tunes us to a higher frequency of our humanity, then we can create a sense of how to move forward and how to pick up the pieces of what's been broken, and to also salvage the beautiful opportunity of what this country is and the opportunity of a life in a country that's built on such a profound ideal, even though there was blood that was shed to get here. The profundity of the idea of America is still intact. I feel that we have to weather this storm and understand that you may be the one that's persecuting now, but eventually that's going to turn on you. This is how this goes.
To completely change tack, John, when you were younger, you were at Juilliard, weren't you, which is an incredibly prestigious music college in America. Many of our listeners will know the name. Is it true that you were sent to a psychiatrist when you were there because you just couldn't put down your melodica, which we would know, I mean, as a kind of a kid's instrument? I mean, it's often the gateway, isn't it, for a kid to get into playing the piano, because they can blow it at the same time and it makes all kinds of noises. I don't want to disrespect your trade here, but is that true?
Yeah, it's in the hands of the creator. The creator, the musician, the creator, the vision of the creative person can take a spoon, you know, the spoons as an instrument down in Cajun country in Louisiana. The washboard is an instrument. We can create an instrument out of anything. The bucket, you know, skiffle music. You can create. So it's all in the mind of the creative person, the soul that has the instrument. And I saw something in this toy, this child's toy, this thing. I played it, and it was a combination of me playing that through the halls and in the cafeteria and me being who I am in an environment that didn't understand that, didn't understand the essence of a young Baptiste, 17 years old, coming from Kendall, Louisiana, going into Lincoln Center. Really just the freedom of being in that and them not understanding led me to a realization that I value my freedom and I value the expression of who I am above the values of fitting into the milieu of the classical elite institutional psychology that that oftentimes it pervades spaces like that, and it dictates people's behavior, and people can become a version of themselves that's not authentic or true, and they can become stiff. And this happens not just in musical environments of this sort, but across the many fields and across the many mediums. There's many environments where we feel that we can't bring our full essence to it. And I started to understand through this experience, especially when you talk about art and creativity, you see it happening now. You know, you look back, that was my experience early on. But then, you know, there's changes. There's it's almost a cultural repatriation that's happening. We're going back and redefining terms and redefining histories and bringing different people that were left out of history back into the history and sorting out all of this stuff that, because of attitudes like that, were left out. A lot of stuff happened to me that I look back on, I'm like, wow, that was important. I'm glad that that happened, even though in the moment it was difficult. And it's like that for many of us in life. Joy comes from pain.
Sure.
You know, oftentimes.
And let's face it, John, the melodica paid off, didn't it? I would love
Straight away.
I would love to hear your thoughts about AI, because we need to go there with every creative person who we talk to at the moment. I think those of us who consume your creativity are only just starting to understand the difference that AI might already have made and certainly will make. And I wonder whether you can see any positives in it. Is it something that you use at all in the process yourself?
No, I don't use AI. I have not used AI yet. I don't even use the ChatGPT or whatever, you know, the
those large language learning models.
Yeah, the LLMs. Yeah. I know exactly. Yeah. I know a lot about them. I've studied them deeply. I know a lot about what's happening, and I've deeply involved myself in understanding it, because recently, this has occurred recently, but it's not something that is a recent development in my life. Over actually the last 12 years, I've been developing a curriculum and a form of scientifically accredited peer-reviewed study around the spiritual practices and oral traditions and the ancient wisdom that's found in sacred scriptures, found in earliest forms of music and the first drum and the first stringed instruments and the feeling of music as a healing force. And I've been studying that with hundreds of music therapists at the helm to try to find empirical data for the healing properties of music that allow for it to be incorporated into treatment and incorporated into treatments through many different forms of medical practice, music therapy being one of them. But, you know, for folks who have PTSD, for folks who practice healing, folks who have gone through tinnitus or have depression and disorders across the spectrum of respiratory disorders, mental disorders, all these ways that people have dealt with stuff in this time, we need it more than ever. And I think AI could be a way to scale and help to find the cures for rare diseases and help to expedite understanding how to treat people. And it could be a way to scale and understand how we're in a loneliness epidemic and we're in a mental health epidemic, and how we can scale treatments for those things, because it's so personalized and it's so, at this point, it's not a communal thing. It's a very single focused thing. It's not something that's bringing people together in real life, but perhaps it could be used to do that. And it can be used in a single focus way to scale treatments across the spectrum of different ailments and maladies. So I believe that if it's aimed at that, it could be a very useful tool. and a powerful way to scale ancient wisdom. You know, we just printed a paper in Voices, which is the you know, is a music wellness music therapy peer reviewed study in Voices, which is a very rigorous and accredited paper that now people can reference from our 12 years that I've been involved in. Many years before that, these great therapists have been working on this, and I've led this curriculum and this study. So now social music is an accredited medical practice with scientific backing. I'm trying to figure out, how do we take these ideas and scale them to people who need them the most? People like in the 17th Ward in New Orleans, or people in Bangalore, people who are in communities that don't have access to highest forms of treatments, and they don't have access to all the things we in more privileged positions have access to. And I don't know exactly where I'm going to land on it, but I'm processing it. And until then, I'm not really using AI.
Sure.
I'm only going to use it once I know how to use it and have an impact in that way.
John Batiste, you're listening to Times Radio. Jane and Fee, 3 minutes to four.
Times Radio, Market Watch, in association with FNC Investment Trust. Listen to Times Radio to hear all the latest financial news from all the global stock markets. Get insight, analysis, and up-to-the-minute information to help you get the most from your investment portfolio. Times Radio, Market Watch. Throughout the day, every Monday to Friday, on Times Radio, in association with FNC. It's smart to start with FNC. Find out more at fnc.com. Capital at risk.
Coming soon, rowing's greatest rivalry, live and exclusively on Times Radio.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
At QuickFit, our customers drive away happy every time. Do we tell them jokes? No.
All right.
We just do our job, but don't take our word for it. Take the word of thousands of excellent customer reviews on Google and Trustpilot.
There's loads.
That's why our customers drive away happy. QuickFit, drive away happy every time.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
So, mega musician John Batiste was our guest today, and tomorrow we've got thriller writer and brilliant broadcaster Mr. Stig Abel joining us just after 3:30. So looking forward to that. You've read his previous books, haven't you?
I have. I'm invested in the life of Jake Jackson.
Yeah. Well, I'm new
Little
to the world.
Sky.
Yes.
Which is this rural idyll that he was gifted by an uncle that managed to take him out of the city where he was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds himself in a bucolic heaven where crime is committed.
It is, unfortunately, or fortunately, if you're in the novel writing business.
Yeah.
So Stig with us. If you're a fan of his Jake Jackson books, you'll want to hear Stig talking about them tomorrow afternoon after 3:30. Our producer today, Maxie Allen, technical operator, Ryan Boyden. And just worth saying, thank you so much for your messages today. Really good fun. Lots of involvement. And we appreciate it, don't we, Fee?
We do. And also, every day is a learning day. I've now got many, many things to go home and do with my food compost. Here's John Pienaar.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar with Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. Iran insists it is not negotiating with the US to end the war in the Middle East. That, according to its ambassador to the UK, who tells me that Donald Trump's bad faith is undermining talks. And a charity cuts ties with the sacked Radio 2 DJ Scott Mills. That's after police confirm he'd been questioned over alleged child sex offences. They dropped the case due to a lack of evidence. And coming up, my exclusive interview with the Iranian ambassador, Saeed Ali Mousavi, jointly with the Times World Affairs editor, Catherine Philp.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Stuart Willing.
John, thank you. Good afternoon. Iran's ambassador to London has told Times Radio that Tehran is not ruling out strikes on British military assets. Syed Ali Mousavi said Iran had welcomed the UK's decision not to join American and Israeli attacks on his country, but he warned Britain's role has now changed.
That the British Fairford military base has been serving for the B-2 and B-1 jets of the American side to use for the against the Iranian people.
So are British bases and British military assets, in your view, then legitimate targets?
This is the very important matter we are considering. This is a very important matter for our self-defense.
You can hear more from that interview here on Times Radio Drive. Donald Trump has suggested the UK should go to the Strait of Hormuz and get your own oil. In a social media post, the US president said countries that didn't join attacks on Iran need to build up courage, warning that America won't be there to help you anymore. Rick Gates was Trump's deputy campaign chairman. He told Times Radio the president hopes for a coalition to control the waterway.
The president does want peace, first and foremost, but he also wants a safe globe. I think he had hoped that some of our allies would step up and participate in this, but most of them have fled and not helped. So I think the president is going to continue his course and ensure that in his mind that the world was safe.
A charity has cut ties with the sacked BBC presenter Scott Mills as police confirm he was questioned over child sex offences. The Metropolitan Police say the case involving allegations of serious sexual offences involving an under 16-year-old boy was dropped for lack of evidence in 2019. Neuroblastoma UK has dropped Mills as patron. A government-commissioned inquiry has concluded that some children and young adults are being incentivised to seek diagnoses of ADHD and autism. The interim report, commissioned by the Health Secretary, found there can be institutional incentives towards medicalising distress. It suggested nearly 1 in 10 young adults self-identify as autistic. Labour MP Carl Turner says he found out he had had the party whip suspended from journalists. Labour sources have told Times Radio he was informed in writing before the decision was made public. It's understood the suspension relates to a wider pattern of behaviour and conduct rather than opposition than his opposition over jury reforms. A man's been jailed for 10 years after an XL bully dog he owned mauled his mother-in-law to death. Aspiring rapper Ashley Warren, who's 41, left Esther Martin in charge of two adult dogs, one of which belonged to him, and eight puppies in Essex in 2024. When police arrived at the scene, they had to taser the animals before it was safe to enter. Esther's daughter, Sonia Martin Coppin, spoke outside court.
She will be remembered for being a great friend to many, a sister, an aunt, a grandmother and a great-grandmother. But to us, she was and always will be our mum.
For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with ServiceNow.
Hello and welcome to Drive on Times Radio with me, John Pienaar. Thanks for joining me. Now, President Trump insists again and again that peace negotiations with Iran are making great progress. We'll tell that to Iran, which insists it isn't negotiating directly or indirectly with intermediaries, not with Pakistan, not with Egypt, not with Turkey, not with Saudi Arabia, not with anyone desperately anxious to help bring the war to an end. The most that Iran is prepared to concede is that intermediaries are passing on American messages and proposals, which are then studied in Tehran. So today, we, by which I mean Catherine Philp, the World Affairs Editor of The Times, and myself, asked for and were given a rare interview with Iran's ambassador to the UK, Syed Ali Mousavi, at length and on the record. And you can hear that conversation on today's programme. The angry denunciations of America, of Israel and their allies, at one point of me, who the ambassador, in an otherwise even-tempered conversation, condemned as the bearer of fake news and disinformation. I'm not, by the way, as I told him. And the occasional flash of something more. As you will hear, that included flashes of insight into the issues where Iran might be willing to offer concessions, just might. Include some warm words on Iran's past relationship with the UK, but coupled strikingly with the news that Iran is weighing up the circumstances in which British warships and military aircraft might be considered legitimate targets for attack. Do then listen on, and do tell me what you make of what you are about to hear. Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, or a tweet to @TimesRadio. So when we sat down at the Iranian embassy, Catherine Philp and I with the ambassador, I started by asking the ambassador if Iran thought it could win this war, and if so, why?
You see that we now are defending ourselves. The two nuclear powers attacked us. They committed one act of aggression. This is a criminal act. And so that the Iranian government and the Iranian people now defending their territorial integrity, national sovereignty, and national dignity. And so, you see, we were in the middle of the negotiations to find one diplomatic solution and removing any concerns regarding for the Iranian, peaceful nuclear activities. But unfortunately, American side and Israeli regime attacked us. Now, this is our inherent right to defend ourselves.
Okay, we understand that answer, as you would expect. I mean, you would have heard many times, as we all have, America's justification for acting in the way that it has. It describes the attack as a form of self-defense against an aggressive power. I know you will contest that, and we will come back to that. But let me just put the point to you again. The war has now begun. It's causing enormous destruction. And it is within the power between America and Iran to come to some sort of end to hostilities. We're told you're not even engaging in dialogue. So let me ask you, why not? Because it will take dialogue to end the war.
You know, we reiterate and we emphasize to have a very diplomatic solution and very peaceful settlement of the disputes or and removing any concerns. We were, let me repeat it, we were in the middle of the negotiation, we were in the middle of the dialogue and talking between Iran and the United States with the mediation of the Sultanate of Oman, that we are very thankful for its endeavors in this path. But it is very important now, we are witnessing two times betrayal of American sides against the Iranian people, Iranian government. The first one in June 2025, and the second in the recent